Nō mai, haere mai, ko Sandra Kailaho, and you're with Safe and Sound, New Zealand's animal rights radio show. We're sponsored by Village Organics, and if you have the good fortune to live in the Waikato of New Zealand, then why don't you check them out next time you're in Hamilton? They're on Commerce Street, Frankton, opposite the Frankton Hotel. Well, last week I spoke to documentary filmmaker Mark Pleschel about his film The End of Meat. Mark and I discussed the three main contributors to the world turning away from animal-based meat, and they are our growing awareness about the effects animal agriculture has on our health and on the environment, and of course, its effects on the animals we've traditionally farmed for food. All these aspects are covered in Mark's film. In part two of the interview, we're about to hear Mark and I chat about some other aspects that the film covers, including the plant-based meat alternatives that are increasingly coming onto the market, and what the world might look like when we coexist peaceably with other animals without slaughtering them in astronomical numbers, as we currently do.
So where do you get your protein from? Nuts, beans, tofu seeds, quinoa, lentils, hemp and peas, oat milk, spinach, and we know what's in it. I wish I could say the same for me. So's my boy and so's broccoli, but you can only still name me one.
That was vegan rapper Kyle O'Sullivan. In that excerpt there, he was stating one of the main objections to not eating animals, which is, where do you get your protein? When the world goes vegan, protein won't be a problem because proteins are also found in many vegan foods. Still, Mark, meat eating is very much a part of our culture, and we do know that culture changes slowly. What are the signs as we move away from meat that it will take place sooner rather than later? What kind of timeline are we thinking of, do you think, and how will it happen? For example, I'm sorry I'm putting a whole lot of questions together, but this is, you can just answer as you wish, that for example in your films, through law changes, through gradual adaptation, a generalized change in the prevailing thinking takes place, and all of these positive forces are converging. So what are your thoughts on all that?
I think that first of all, we need kind of a critical mass in society where people are convinced that eating animals or eating too much animals is wrong. So, and we can see that slowly happening in some countries right now. So I think that that movement will become stronger. And we see that in the growth of plant-based products and just the interest in plant-based diets. But we see that as well in the interest for future foods such as cultured meat that is being more discussed. And I've also have a few researchers in the film I've interviewed, and they've been working on cultured meat for a couple of years now, and they predict that it might come onto the market in about 3 to 5 years. And if that happens, I think there might be a benefit for people that just don't want to stop eating animal products. And they see that there's something that's meat that doesn't come from an animal, but it's the same taste and texture, that they might be more easily convinced. That might really eat things up in the end of meat.
Yes, and presumably a hamburger won't cost $30,000 in 5 years' time, because I think the first cultured meat patty cost something like $30,000 to produce.
Yeah, that's true. But that was 5 years ago now, yes, so and the price has fallen rapidly. And there's a number of companies that have all different ideas on how to work on a process and make it more, make it cheaper, make it more efficient and more easy.
Definitely. And then there's plant-based meats. They're very clever imitations now of chicken and pork and beef and so on, all made from plants with herbs and spice flavoring.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a trend that's also going to continue to grow. There's going to be more imitations or more plant-based alternatives to many animal products that you won't be able to notice that it's not meat or not an egg or not milk.
One thing that we didn't touch on prior is the fact that the world's population is increasing and will continue to increase, and that will bring even more burden on us.
Yeah, definitely, and it's also going to increase all the problems associated with factory farming or consumption of meat products. So
that's
there's
right.
going to be a higher number of diseases. There's going to be a greater threat of zoonotic diseases. Climate change is going to be accelerated, and just pollution in general. So I think it's not possible to ignore the problem of animal consumption in the future. So.
I think our growing awareness about the lives of animals, not only do they feel pain, but they have their own emotional lives and relationships as well. And in your film, you go to various farm sanctuaries, and the people there spoke about the individual personalities of their turkeys and their cows and their sheep, and how, in fact, they're not an amorphous group of semi-automatons. They're all individual, and when they've lost their fear of us and they're relaxed, their personalities shine through.
Yeah, definitely. That was the reason I wanted to see what a world could look like where we live together with certain animals that we eat now. And the first place, of course, was sanctuaries. So I visited sanctuaries, and it was great to meet all the animals and hear their stories, how they got there, and what kind of stories they have. It was crazy. And then we also went to Esther the Wonder Pig, who's become an internet phenomenon with so many likes on Facebook and
They bought Esther thinking that she was a miniature and she wouldn't get any bigger than a puppy.
Yeah, exactly. And then she turned out to be a huge pig.
She's enormous. Yeah, she's a real star, Esther. So the change coming about, it'll happen, I suppose, the way many changes in society do happen, on a number of fronts simultaneously. If you look at the role of governments, even just mandating food labelling, for example, in the interim will help people understand how animals have lived prior to them being killed. And the alternative protein sources that you mentioned, that includes continued development on other foods, such as, for example, that wonderful algae, what is it called, Dolph, which has it has enough protein to feed the world, and it's seaweed.
Yeah, and it tastes, when you deep fry it, it tastes
like bacon.
That's a benefit.
Yeah, and so changes are happening now, and they'll presumably continue to happen at a faster rate. Another aspect of your very comprehensive film, which really excited me, I must say, I was so happy to see someone actually make a film that called The End of Meat and therefore kind of predict and lay a blueprint for the future. But you spoke to lawyers and architects and so on, and they were talking about how, when we've espoused at the end of meat, what will happen to all the animals, and how will we coexist with animals who live amongst us in the cities, like stray cats and dogs and mice and rats, and as well as our domestic pets, but also animals in the wild. And laws will be made to give protection to all citizens, and that includes our animal populations. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Well, first of all, I would say that my film isn't really a blueprint. It's just an idea how a world could look like. The film was just to turn things around. You know, we always, previous documentaries always have focused on the negative side of things.
Yes.
So I wanted to turn it upside down and look at what the possibilities could be for us and for the whole planet if we could just stop eating meat. Regarding our future relationship with animals, that's really complicated because there's just so many animals and there's so much conflict going on, and we all already have influenced the world so tremendously in the lives of so many animals. But I started this idea or this thought with the concept of the zoopolis from two Canadian authors, Will Kimlicker and Sue Donaldson, and they've written a book called Zoopolis, and it's on the basis of citizenship rights. So they have different categories of animals, and there's different ideas of citizenship that we could use for a future concept on how to live with these animals. For example, domestic animals should be seen as co-citizens, so we have a responsibility for them, that we brought them into this world, and that we should take care of them because we brought them into this world. So that means we should give them health care, the right amount of freedom, that they can satisfy their interests and they're not being treated unfairly, and then there's animals that pass from the wild through the cities. So you have like pigeons, you have mice, rats, squirrels. That's a different type or category of animals. And then there's wild animals who live autonomously from humans. And it's a really thought-provoking book, and it's a great concept, a really fresh concept compared to previous animal rights philosophers' ideas. So I can really recommend that book to everyone. Yeah, in the film, I can only touch on this idea or concept really briefly, but it's really interesting if you look at all the relationships we have with animals. And for this film, we've actually filmed more than we could use for the final edit. So on the DVD, there's going to be a little short documentary called A Future Imperative.
Great name.
On our thanks. On our relationship with wild animals or animals that live amongst us in cities and so on.
I must admit, I often think about wild animals. I'm an animal activist, mainly because of the abuse of farmed animals and just the way we view animals in general, animals in research, animals in entertainment, whatever. But we don't often talk a lot about wild animals, and I feel sad sometimes that we tend to ignore wild animals. We just let nature get on and do its thing. But of course, wild animals suffer a great deal.
Yep.
They feel pain, you know, emotions and relationships amongst them, just like any other animal. But nature's pretty darn indifferent, and quite often they're cold and they're hungry and they're thirsty and they're fearful of predators. So I always think that we can do more than we do for wild animals as well. But I guess that's a different topic. But any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. There's a whole research idea about this. It's called wild animal suffering, and they look at the amount. They're trying to calculate to what amount these animals are suffering, and it's really staggering numbers. And but there's a divide in the animal community, if you feel like, between the people that say we should intervene in all animal suffering. So for example, we should save as many animals we can, wild animals, from animal suffering in general. And there's another group that's saying that we should only intervene if it's human caused suffering. So humans are the reason
you can
animals
understand
are suffering,
that.
But it's not always so easy to tell. So, but there's a little bit of that question as well in that short documentary I mentioned before.
I'd just like to finish on going back to the Jains, to the concept of ahimsa, respect for all life forms, because those who disrespect other life forms disrespect their own existence. And I think that's a quote from Mahavira, who is the guru figure of the Jains. And all this has got me thinking about the picture books that I saw as a child, where the lion and the lamb are lying peaceably together in a meadow in the peaceable kingdom. And my last question to you is, do you think that when we refuse to willfully hurt other creatures, the way we do now in eating meat, if as a species we turn away from that and take the road where we embrace them, we love them, we care for them, do you think that we'll be closer to a world without wars, to a peaceable kingdom?
Well, I certainly hope so, but I'm a little bit skeptical, because I've looked at the development of veganism in Germany, and although there's a lot more vegans now, there's still some of the problems that we've seen before. So there's this concept of intersectionality, that all different forms of exploitation are connected, so like racism, sexism, speciesism, for example. And we see that like in the whole capitalist system, that it's just trying to exploit the idea of veganism, for example, to gain profits from it. I think there needs to be more awareness, and there needs to be a bigger change for a more peaceful world. I think there needs to be, a more general change how people perceive their lives in general, just how they live their lives, and it's not just the treatment of animals, it's the treatment of the whole planet and how we treat other people. That's, and I think that's really hard to change. That's even harder than convincing people to go vegan or vegetarian.
But going vegan or vegetarian is not just about putting different food in our mouths. It's also about espousing a philosophy, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. But that's one of the reasons I went vegan. But we see that with the growth of veganism, it seems to be reduced just to an idea that's not really connected to the idea of the philosophy of animal rights anymore. So it's more or less like people are more excited for the new vegan ice cream than
I see what you're saying.
Animals in laboratories and animal liberation. So I don't know where that development is going, but I've gotten a bit more critical over the past few years.
Yeah. I studied evolutionary biology when I was at university. I just did it for a year. But it left an indelible impression on me. And then throughout the 70s, I was getting into all the New Age type of literature about the evolution of consciousness and so on. And I can see how the two are coming together. I think we're evolving not only, you know, over a long time sort of physically, but there's conscious evolution that is taking place. And I choose to see the end of meat. Watching your film was thrilling for me because I do believe it and I think it's inevitable, but I see that as an evolution of consciousness. And so when we become more compassionate and when compassion is part of our very nature and we have the growing awareness of the world we live in that the internet is giving us now, that I think that these will come together and there will be a general evolution of consciousness, and therefore many of the problems that we have as a species, the way we treat each other, can't fail to be affected. This is my hope.
I certainly hope so as well, but I don't know how it's going. There's so many factors that you need to think of, so it's really hard to say when it's going to change or predict how our future is going to look like.
Yes.
I just hope my film can give a glimpse into a future, how it could be a more compassionate world for humans and animals.
Yes, and it's very entertaining as well. It's a wonderful film. Thank you so much, and thank you for staying up so late at night to be able to allow me to interview at a very reasonable hour over here. And
sure.
Are you working on anything else at the moment?
Yeah, I'm working on two new documentaries, but they're more Germany-focused at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, I'll keep making films in the future.
Thanks again, Mark. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for having me. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed our interview with Mark Pleschel, and if you missed part one, then you can find it on iTunes under Safe and Sound, or you can hop over to our Facebook page, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. Please check out the website theendofmeat.com, and Mark has other links there that you can click on if you want to know more. And don't forget to check out the book Mark recommends, Zoopolis, A Political Theory of Animal Rights. And the authors are Sue Donaldson and Will Kimlicker. Mark is right, of course, when he says that the capitalist system itself is implicated in so many problems in both animals and people's rights, and changes need to be made on a number of fronts. But I still maintain that by refusing to hurt sentient beings, by finding ways to live peaceably alongside them, we'll surely be a good distance closer to a peaceful and compassionate world. Well, we've been talking about the end of meat, and so I think a requiem is in order. Lacrimosa is part of Mozart's Requiem Mass in D minor and has been voted one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written. Be sure to keep listening to Safe and Sound. We have some very interesting guests coming up for you in the coming weeks, and don't forget, we're always pleased to get your messages. Tell us what you think. So here now is Mozart's Requiem for the end of meat. Until next time, mighty well. Go well. Bye-bye.